Intervju Radija Študent.
Lepo pozdravljeni v terminu za intervju Radija Študent, kjer se bomo danes pogovarjali z legendarnim angleškim kitaristom Keithom Rowom. Keith je bil eden prvih kitaristov, ki so kljubovali konvencionalni percepciji inštrumenta, ter ga enostavno položili na mizo, preparirali njegovo drobovje in zavrgli harmonične lestvice. Bil je eden od ustanovnih članov sredi 60-ih nastale zasedbe AMM, brez katere bi odsev sodobne glasbe bržkone izgledal precej drugače. Že 3 dni se na delavnici v okviru festivala zvočnih umetnosti Air Zoom mudi v Ljubljani, danes ob 8 zvečer pa bo v galeriji Kapelica mogoče prisluhniti njegovemu solističnemu nastopu. Preden se posvetimo pogovoru, pa poslušamo še del njegove kompozicije.
Being in Ljubljana has been really, 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 really nice. I really enjoyed it. I really like the scale of the city, and you know, I've been to a few bars and restaurants, and really, really, really enjoyed it. You know, I've had a really nice time. The weather's been fantastic as well, so everything's been great.
So, just heard the result of a workshop we did here that was based around Cornelius Cardius graphic score. So, can you tell us more about this graphic score?
Yeah, what we've been working on is, as you say, Cornelius Cardew's 193-page graphic score. We worked just on a handful of pages, that's pretty normal. It's very rare to play the whole score, because if you played the whole score, it would take you 18 hours or something, you know. So we would do enough to do 20 minutes of music or so. The score itself is a kind of graphic reworking of Wittgenstein's Tritatus Logicus Philosophicus. That's why it's called Treatise, it's Cardew's Treatise. In a sense, it's the basic mindset you need to develop for Cardew's Treatise. Probably very much like the mindset for Wittgenstein, you know, work very rigorously working through the consequences of an action guided by the score itself. It's the most, for me, the most wonderful inventive, creative piece of work, you know. I think over the years, I've pretty well always had it with me for the last 40 years. I kind of travel with it constantly. I've performed it a huge amount. I always think if I was a cello player in my 70th year, the Bach suites would be the thing which was in my cello case. You know, it would be very kind of, the pages would be kind of stained and creased and torn and worn. And the cello pieces would be the thing I would pull out to play. And for me, Cardew's treatise has been the equivalent of that, you know, the way of... It just seems to me like everyday reality is actually in this score. You can use just the real world slots very easily into it. In a way, the real world is slotting into this interview, you know, me talking here with the traffic going by. It's very much like Cardew, you know.
Do you think that Slovenian musicians, now that we heard the performance, have captured the essence of the Cornelius Cardew?
Well, I think it's really difficult to say that any of us ever captured the essence. Even people who've worked on it for 40 years still struggle, really. I think if we're being honest, really struggle to know. I don't know. I don't know if we capture the essence or not, you know. Maybe that's true of, you know, a piece by John Sebastian Bach. You know, if you're a Bach player, did Rosalind Turak feel that she ever captured the essence? I don't know.
So, if we move back a little, how did you came up with the idea to put a guitar on the table in the first place? If you remember.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember the process. In a sense, what happened was that I was studying painting. I'm a painter. I did 5 years in front of the canvas. And I think it was really exploiting the major difference between the conservatoire and the Beaux-Arts. In the conservatoire, you learn your craft to play Haydn, to play Mozart. In fact, you're given permission to play other people's music. And that's what you do. You make a profession of playing other people's music. In the Beaux-Arts, in the painting school, you do not have permission to paint other people's paintings. So basically what I did was to take the mindset of the Beaux-Arts, of the painting school, and just apply it directly to the electric guitar. So I took the mindset of the painter and applied it directly to the guitar. The mindset of the painter is developing your own language, finding out who you are, finding out what you have to say, developing your own techniques, your own world. You know, like, it's very much like Baudelaire, you know, you are your own king, your own prince, your own master, your own god.
So that kind of led you to move guitar in an unconventional fashion.
So that's right, to look at the guitar as an object and say, well, what can I do with this? What does this mean to me? What is it for me? What are the opportunities here? You know, like if you were painting a landscape, you'd look at the landscape and say, so what is this for me? How do I relate to it? And you wouldn't think, right, okay, I'm going to do it like Caravaggio, or I'm going to do it like Leonardo da Vinci. You're going to do it like you. So I looked at the object and said, right, I'm going to be Keith Rowe, and I'm going to, this is what I'm going to do.
Any early criticisms?
Oh yeah, boy, you cannot believe the criticisms.
Yeah.
I would meet kind of drummers going down the street, or jazz drummers, who'd see me play around with knives on the guitar, and they would say, "You still fucking about with knives on that fucking guitar," kind of thing. You know? And in fact, well, I would go to jam sessions, I must have been stupid to do it. I went to jam sessions and they would come and unplug the guitar. You know, it was probably one of the first unplugged performances I ever did, but it was forcibly put on me, you know. They just didn't like it, they didn't get it. An abstraction was something they weren't willing to interact with, you know.
There was a rumor that actually Paul McCartney was on one of the AMM concerts.
Yeah.
And he said that you were playing just too loud. How did you see at the time the music of the Beatles?
Well, the thing is that Paul McCartney and the craft of those people really is to produce three-minute pieces of work, you know. So we would play for 2 hours. Of course it's too long. Of course, you know. If your whole world revolves around doing three-minute snippets, then, yeah, 10 minutes is probably too long, you know.
So, if we go to composition, and how do you perceive the composition in addition to improvising? Because maybe when you are improvising, you're always in a certain mindset or in mind flow. And does that affect your playing as well as it might be the playing inside a certain composition?
Yeah. I rarely use the word improvisation. It's not a word I particularly like. Because I think a lot of us don't improvise as much as we say we are. I think a lot of people are in their bedroom, in their studio, practicing things, and they come out on the stage and actually regurgitate what they've been practicing, you know? Is that improvisation? Well, maybe it is, but doesn't seem very pure to me. And maybe pure improvisation is not possible. So I'll go along with a very, very vague kind of notion of what improvisation is. But I think it's for me, it's not a very satisfying description of what happens, you know. And also, I don't have a huge divide between improvisation and composition. I think improvisation and composition are concerned with exactly the same things. You know, I think when I sit down and perform, my concerns are exactly the same as the Borodin String Quartet. Well, I hope they are anyway. It's about being in the moment, producing music. Whether the things are known or unknown, I don't see a great difference.
You mentioned practicing. It's known that the AMM never practice or talk about music.
Well, that's not strictly true. No, that's not true. Eddie practices. John Tilbury practices. I never did practice.
Even alone?
Never.
You never practice.
I did when I was a jazz guitar player, but not in the context of AMM, no.
Even technical skills you never practiced.
No. The only time I would take the guitar out when I'm home is if there was something needed fixing, a wire needed resoldering. So I would never... I would never sit at home doing stuff and then... See, I think it's like this. The only reality is the reality when you're performing. And you can't rehearse reality. I mean, you can, in a sense, train your awareness for something which is going to come up in the future. But I think for me, in the kind of world that I live in, that part of music, you cannot rehearse that, you cannot practice it. So therefore, it's just a waste of time, you know, or it's just delusional. Anyway, you probably get into bad habits, because what would happen is that you'd be home, you do something, and you think, oh, that's really great, fantastic, I really love that, hey, wow, great. And then you're improvising, and you hit a really difficult, sticky patch. What are you going to do? It's only human that you drag out this thing you know that works. It's like a safety net, you know.
So Where do you get an inspiration for all these different, pieces that are not musical by its primary status? They're, used for something else. You mentioned knives for playing guitars. Where do you think it's the limit of using all these different gadgets?
Well, there's no limit. I mean, the knife is pure Duchamp. It's pure Marshall Duchamp because, see, the guitar's on the table.
Toilet.
Yeah, the latrine. Yeah. You see, on a table at home, when you're having your meal, the knife will say it's on the at your right hand on the table. When the guitar is on the table, you pick up the knife about 10 centimeters, and then you put it between the strings and the guitar over the pickup, and then with your finger you flick the knife and the knife rattles over the pickup, and then through the amplifier you hear what? It's ambiguous. It's not clear what that is. Are you hearing the object of the knife? Are you hearing the guitar? Are you hearing the pickup? What do you hear? And I really just loved the ambiguity of that. So when Marshall Duchamp picks up something and presents it as art, it's ambiguous to what it is. So all those objects on the table are objets trouvés. They come from Marshall Duchamp. They come from analytical cubism of the object. The object represented as itself, but put into a cult. Yeah. So what you do is you take a everyday object, then you turn it into a cultural object by moving its position.
Actually, one critic of Duchamp's toilet. And I was wondering, where do you think is the distinction of putting something ordinary into a cultural context in music? For example, what do you think about some player who doesn't have any background and just comes and his guitar on the table and then starts to, play with bottles or something.
Mm.
Would you wonder, does he have any training, basic training of music, or just listen?
You listen, then you can tell.
Oh, you can tell?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can tell whether someone can draw or not. And you can tell whether someone is a musician or not. See, the thing is, you can be a great guitar player and a terrible musician. You can be a great guitar player and a great musician and a terrible artist. And the goal for me is to be an artist.
Awesome. That covers the questions. What do you think yourself as a guitarist or not? Mm. Okay, so when did you... You were primarily an electric guitarist.
Always, always.
Artist. No, let's say artist. when did you first pick up the acoustic guitar?
I almost never have, actually. My brother had a guitar given to him for Christmas, and I played that. That was an acoustic guitar. But I've never really played acoustic guitar. I've always played electric. I was always interested in the electric. I always was an electric player. And I think the reason for sticking with the electric guitar is that electricity allows a certain kind of abstraction which is not possible without electricity. There's a kind of hard-edged abstraction which is readily available for the electric guitar, which is just not there for the acoustic guitar or for acoustic instruments. Acoustic instruments have a lyrical abstraction, but not the hard-edged abstraction, which actually interests me.
So you think the future is in the electricity still?
Well, no, the future is in both. There's a huge future for both. There's a huge future for acoustic instruments, you know, for classical instruments. There's a huge future for the string quartet, you know, in its most classical form. I'm not ruling anything out at all. I just think that we're adding.
Poslušali ste intervju z angleškim kitarskim inovatorjem Keithom Rowom, ki bo danes ob 8. zvečer nastopil v galeriji Kapelica. Intervju je pripravil Tit Podobnik.
Intervju Radia Študent.